Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here is Bob.
Deuteronomy 5, we're beginning in verse 16 tonight. We covered the first part of the Ten Commandments last time. Now, I need to maybe set the stage a bit. The Ten Commandments are broken into two halves according to subject matter. The first half deals with man's relationship to God. The second half, beginning in verse 16, is man's relationship to other men. And the unifying theme, I think, to this second half is the ideal of faithfulness. We're going to see it in every aspect. It's going to carry over parents and into the rest of the society's laws and those kind of things. I think it'll be very helpful. Always remember that God dealt with Israel in grace first, and only after he had brought them out of Egypt, only then did he give them the law. The law came after God's grace. The law is not a set of rules to bind man. The law is a set of guidelines that, in such a way that man can be happy in the world as God has made it. The Ten Commandments are simply a way to help man limit his own greed, his own passion, that society may be peaceful and happy. So the Ten Commandments were only given to make man happy, and they were only given after man had fallen, you see? So it's God's guidelines for redeemed society. Now, number one, and you know these by heart, but I think I'm going to try to give you a new twist tonight. Honor your father and your mother, as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be prolonged, and that it may go well with you on the land which the Lord your God has given you. Now, the question is, what does honor your father and your mother mean? Does that mean that you have to obey them all of your life? Does that mean that you can't ever disagree? What does that mean exactly, honor? I mean, a good word for that is respect. It's to hold. And notice respect is not based on whether you agree with them or not. It's not based on that at all. It's based on the fact that we honor our parents because we love God, and God has placed us in that relationship. I think that two things need to be said. Number one, who is this speaking to? Is this speaking to young children? Well, I think in a secondary kind of way, it's speaking to children to say, honor your father and your mother. But really, it's not speaking to children at all. It's speaking to adults. For you see, the Bible is written in an Oriental society. And if there's one thing that's revered in an Oriental society, it's age, wisdom. And so what this is an admonition for children to take care of their parents all their life. And I'll give you a New Testament quote for that. 1 Timothy 5:4. Is a good New Testament quote to say we always have to honor and respect and take care of our parents. And so I think it's a foundation stone to society. One of the problems we're having in the United States, I think, is the family is moving, you see. It's becoming unstable. And whenever that happens to society, there's trouble. So here we say, based on the fact that parents are to teach their children about God, the reverse side of that is the children are to honor their parents. Now, notice what it says, and your mother. Now, this is very important because this shows that even though Oriental society, in as far as what they said legally, may have put women on the level of chattel or property, a Hebrew mother was honored in her own home. And she was honored in the same way a father was honored, in a sense. If the Old Testament had a unique way for discipline, for child rearing. If you cursed your father or mother, do you know what the penalty was in the Old Testament? Stoning. And I'll give you those, just so you may have them in case you want to show your children someday. Exodus 21:17, Deuteronomy 27:16. Now, so I think what it's saying here is, as a child is growing up, the only authority he knows is parents, right? And one of the problems we have in our society is that authority is not respected on any level. You let anybody who is in authority say something and everybody gets nervous. Our age is almost touched with the flavor of anarchy in every level of society. And it's because we don't respect authority. And I think that there's some good New Testament teaching about authority and respect for authority. And this is one way that Hebrew built it in on the basic level of their society. Now notice where it says here, that your days may be prolonged in the land the Lord your God gives you. Now I've heard many sermons preached on that to say, if you honor your father and your mother, you'll live, you know, long. You'll be 90 years old plus. That's ridiculous. That's not saying that at all. This is saying that if a society is characterized by honor in the home and respect for family life, that society will last. And I'm basing that interpretation on verse 33 of this same chapter and on chapter 4, verse 40, where the same phrase is used in a slightly different context referring to the covenant between God and Israel. So I think it's a society promise and not an individual promise. So, you can have all the honor in the world and still have gallstones or something. I don't know. So it's not talking about individual longevity. It's talking about the basic framework of society. Then the next one I think is very important. You shall not... King James has what? Kill. You shall not kill. How many of you have heard that, memorized that commandment that way all your life? Thou shalt not kill. There's only one problem with that. You just can't translate the Hebrew word that way. New American Standard has it, thou shalt not murder. And that's the word. I've heard folks say, well, I can't go to war because of this verse. Or I can't kill animals. I'm going to be a vegetarian because of this verse. Or capital punishment is wrong because of this verse. Now, I want you to listen real good to me about these things. Israel, you just read through Deuteronomy, and they kill folks for spitting on the sidewalk. I mean, they stoned them for this and that. Because, see, coming out of a nomadic community, any crime that was worth being punished, friends, it was the death penalty. That's why false witness is so bad. So they didn't Mickey Mouse around. They didn't bother you about little stuff. But what they did say, you just didn't do. Now, on the basis of that, if Israel had capital punishment, then you know that this law can't mean thou shalt not kill. So it doesn't refer to capital punishment. What else does it refer to? It doesn't refer to war. Just read through your Old Testament. These guys fought to drop the hat. And they kept saying, God told us to. It's the concept of holy war. So it doesn't refer to capital punishment, and it doesn't refer to war. Well, what about if you were out and you were chopping down a tree and your axe head fell off and hit somebody in the head and killed them? Does that mean you've broken the commandment? No. This commandment, the Hebrew word for kill or murder here, is a word that means to violently crush. It's the word for personal revenge. It's the matter of fact, it's even limited to that because, you know, if a relative of yours was killed, the Old Testament says the next kin has to go avenge that murder. So it's even limited more than that. What it's saying is that you can't take your private selfishness or revenge on someone else. It's saying, thou shalt not violently murder for selfish reasons. Now, that's the input of that verse. Not thou shalt not kill. God killed animals in the Garden of Eden to clothe Adam and Eve before they were expelled. The Bible talks about that Samuel hacked Agag to pieces before the Lord. Samuel thought that's what God wanted. So you better interpret this verse in the light of the society that it's dealing with, okay? Now, the next one, really verses 17 through 21 are laws that are very common to all Eastern societies. You may have heard from archaeological discoveries the law called the Law of Hammurabi. Now, that's a law that predates the Law of Moses by several hundred years from Babylon. And the code of Hammurabi and the Ten Commandments are very similar. Now, many have said, well, that just shows you that Moses copied them from the Babylonians. No, it doesn't show that at all to me. Because this law seems to be a law that all human societies, no matter what, they tend to stand behind that. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not covet. Those are natural things that every human society has. That tells me that we don't have a progression to a higher level, but we have a fall from a higher level. And what we have is that God has put an inner light into all men that some things are innately wrong. Killing, stealing, those things are innately wrong in every situation, you see. So what we have here is inner light in all men, God's revelation of himself, as it's reflected in societies. And this is the very argument that C.S. Lewis uses about a proof for God, that all societies have the same basic laws. And he says that's God's inner light. And I agree with that. Now, when it says thou shalt not commit adultery, we need to define these terms because our understanding in 20th century of these Hebrew terms is not correct. Adultery in the Old Testament only refers to extramarital sexual activity. It doesn't refer to anybody who's not married. Both parties weren't married. It's not covered here. And the reason for that is the Old Testament understanding about the afterlife. They believed that a man lived through his what? Seed. A man lived on his children. And think of what a terrible thing it would be if the children weren't really yours. So it was a very important law for society that any kind of unfaithfulness to the marriage bond is condemned by stoning. Now, notice the first law is faithfulness to parents. The second law is faithfulness in not taking your brother's life. And then notice the third law deals with faithfulness within the home. Now, the Bible talks other places about, let me give you this quote. Deuteronomy 22, 23 and following shows that even a woman who was betrothed was considered as a married woman. That's why Mary had such, they accused her of such terrible things when she was pregnant with Jesus, you see, without being really married to Joseph. Now, the deal was that a betrothed woman was considered to be a married woman. And you know how old they were when they were betrothed? Very, very young. So see, Israeli culture was a different kind of culture from ours, and yet the law says that this was a very sacred thing and should not be violated. I think we need to understand that. Let me see. Okay. But I want to mention before I go that this idea of adultery is often used about the relationship between God and his people. Ezekiel, Hosea. You see, God is considered to be a husband to Israel. And when Israel goes after other gods, it's called a whoring after other gods. And it's considered to be spiritual adultery when God's people worship other gods. And the same thing about the family is brought to light here. Now, notice what it says, thou shalt not steal. Now, I've always heard that taught that means that you should not take somebody else's property. Because of the context of these laws dealing with faithfulness in the community, I think this law, thou shalt not steal, although it means don't take something that somebody else is, the main thrust of this is kidnapping. And I want to give you two verses to prove that, please. Deuteronomy 24:7 and Exodus 21:16 specify this law. What it's saying is, you shall not take your brother, steal your brother, and sell him as a slave. Now, this was characteristic of nomadic society. And it was characteristic of Hebrew society that a Hebrew could sell himself as a slave if he got poor or took bankruptcy, so to speak. He could be sold into slavery for whatever he owed. Now, this is saying, you shall not kidnap your brother and sell him. And I think that in the context, this would be faithfulness again to your covenant brother. That you wouldn't. It's like taking his life and giving it away as if it belonged to you. But see, the life belongs to God. That's why killing is wrong, in a sense. And that's why this is wrong, kidnapping someone's life and forcing them to do something that they shouldn't or wouldn't. Now, that's why this stealing is dealing with man-napping, kidnapping, that kind of thing. At least I think it is. Now, verse 20. And you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Now, remember, we're moving from a nomadic society in Exodus chapter 20, the first Ten Commandments. And now Deuteronomy 5 is a preaching about the Ten Commandments, relating it to the new community about to be settled in the land. They're moving from a nomadic community to a settled community. Now, what I said a minute ago about penalties were rough in a nomadic community. Friend, they didn't slap your hands and give you three demerit points. It was either if you did something bad enough, you were killed, and if it wasn't that bad, they let you mind your own business in nomadic society. But now they're moving in to a settled society. In the Old Testament, it's not like our system. In our system, at least theory-wise, you are innocent until you're proved guilty, right? In ancient societies, if you were accused by someone, it was your responsibility to prove them wrong. And if you proved them wrong, the one who falsely accused you took the penalty that would have been yours. So this bearing false witness again shows the ideal of faithfulness within the community. Okay? And notice it says to your neighbor, which means another Hebrew. I guess it means you could lie if they weren't your neighbor. I don't know. But it's talking about the covenant community is the main aspect of this focus. Now, 21. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, his manservant, his ox, his donkey, or anything else that belongs to your neighbor. Ladies, do you like to be mentioned the same way with a house and a donkey? Well, I have one more shot for you. In Exodus 20, the wife not even mentioned first. The house is mentioned first. But many of us think because of the way the Hebrews used the word house, it meant the house and all that belongs to it, which the wife was included. Now, don't judge the Old Testament by our society today. As I've said, there are many beautiful passages in the Old Testament of how the women were treated. But it was a chauvinist pig society, folks. Women could not divorce the husband could divorce the wife. Adultery was punishable by stoning for the woman, but sometimes the man got off. So there was a split standard in the Old Testament. God corrected that, didn't he, in Jesus? But here we have a little bit of a split standard. Now notice it says, thou shalt not covet, and then it says, thou shalt not desire. Now the word covet can mean two things in Hebrew. It can mean an inner desire, or it can mean an outward taking. Now if it's an outward taking that's here, none of the commandments have an inner aspect. But if it's the ideal of coveting, that this is the only commandment that has a motive to it. The other one said, don't do this, don't do that. This one says, don't think this, don't think that. Now, it's the capstone to all the other commandments, because I think it has the word covet and also the word desire, that what we have here is this inner action. This is the exact kind of thing that Paul said convicted him that he was a sinner. This is the very thing that Jesus took and said, he used it in murdering adultery. He said, you've heard that you shall not murder. I say you shall not hate. Inner attitude that results in murder. You have heard that you shall not commit adultery, but I say unto you, you shall not lust. Inner attitude that results in adultery. So Jesus took this last commandment and raised the rest of the commandments to the level of inner motive and attitude as over against simply outer action. The difference between a man that does not steal because he feels like it's wrong, and the man that does not steal because he feels like he'll get caught, is all the difference in the world. One is acting on Christian principles, and one is acting on selfish self-interest. So if you steal because you feel like it's wrong, because there's some rules about life, then that's one thing. But if you steal because you think the cops are too good, and Columbo might get you, well, that's a whole different ballgame, you see. So Jesus took this idea of inner motive and used it to express the rest of the commandments as an example, and just picked two to show you this is the way we ought to do all of them, you see. Now, notice when it says, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. What I think here is the problem is, it's saying, don't look at things only through the eyes of self-interest. You know, our big problem is that we use people to get what we want. One of the problems in the business world is that some people will walk over anybody to get it to the top. And when you start using people as simply objects to gratify your desires, you're in bad shape. And that's this time here. It's saying, don't desire somebody else's thing just for you, you know. Now, I think that's very important. And this whole last commandment is really the capstone that takes the Ten Commandments out of a legalistic structure and puts it into a commitment of life kind of thing. And I think it's very important, this last one, is inner motive. Now, verse 22 down through 27, let me read real quickly. We're going to do some summary verses here to finish this chapter out, and we'll come back and have a time for discussion, okay? Verse 22, these are the words the Lord spoke to all your assembly at the mountain from the midst of the fire, of the cloud, and of the thick gloom, with a voice. And he added no more, and he wrote them on two tablets of stone and gave them to me. Now this reflects Exodus chapter 20. This is the coming of God on Mount Sinai. Now, it says he came in fire and smoke and thick darkness. Now, some people say, well, see, God was trying to cover himself up. No, not at all. God came in thick darkness so he would not scare the people to death. Matter of fact, when they heard his voice, they said, no more, you talk to God and you tell us what God says. We don't want to hear him, we don't want to see. So the fact that he came in thick darkness was not something to cover up who he was. It was really a way to let the people not be too afraid. Because, as you know, God doesn't have a body, right? He's spirit. Now, notice where it talks about, and he added no more, the last part of that verse, and he wrote them on two tables of stone and gave them to me. Now, if you'll turn back to Exodus 31:18 for a minute. Exodus 31:18. Notice what it says here. And when he had finished speaking with him upon Mount Sinai, he gave Moses the two tablets of testimony, the tables of stone written by the finger of God. Now, God didn't have a finger, but it simply means that God is the one who carved these things out. To show the Ten Commandments was biblically accurate, at least in the fact that God wrote the Ten Commandments and not Moses. So there's one way it was biblical. But listen. Turn also to Exodus 34, just a couple of chapters over. Exodus 34, verses 27 and 28, listen to what it says. Then the Lord said to Moses, write down these words, for in accordance with these words I have made a covenant with you in Israel. So he was there with the Lord 40 days, 40 nights, And he did not eat bread or drink water, and he, little h, meaning Moses, wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. Now, who wrote it? Did Moses write it? Did God write it? Well, I think what we have here is, I think that God wrote the ten words. Now, ten words is a Hebrew word that means God wrote the thou shalt not kill, and Moses wrote the elaborations to it. Thou shalt not take your wife, the donkey, the house. So I think that God wrote the main thing, and Moses added to it. You say, that's getting around it. Well, I guess it is. But I think that's what happened. I don't know how else to reconcile these two. One said God did it. One said Moses did it. It may refer that God wrote the first one and Moses wrote the second one because Moses broke them. But I really think that Moses just added to, because God told him to add to, a clarification of what these things meant. Instead of saying, thou shalt honor your father and your mother, Moses went ahead and put, and you know, on and on, your days will be prolonged and all that. Now, notice in verse 23 where it says, all the heads of your tribes and your elders. I've told you many times, the number of people involved here must have been over 1.5 million people. Now, I don't know what Moses looked like, but he wasn't shaped like a bullhorn. Can you imagine what it's like to talk so 1.5 million people can hear you without a PA system? Now, I've told you before that I thought the elders came to Moses, and Moses told the elders, and the elders went back and told the people. And this verse seems to validate that. That Moses told the heads of the tribes and the elders. Then the elders went back and told the people. I think that makes more sense than him trying to speak to 1.5 million people. And then notice in verse 27 where it says, really it should be, you go near and hear all the Lord your God says, and then speak to us all that the Lord our God will speak to you, and we will hear it and do it. Moses was the mediator between God and man for the covenant, because just the presence of God scared people. And that's a good sign. We're not supposed to fear the Lord as a little puppy fears a paper. But we are to fear the God in the sense of respect and awe. I mean, really, He's God, and we're simply flesh and blood. I mean, there should be a respect and an awe there, you see. And that's what it, I think this is good they did that, but they didn't keep that. And notice it says that we'll hear and do it. Friends, just don't tell me how much you love God if you know what to do and you're not doing it. You know, Jesus kept saying, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things that I tell you to do? Christianity is a hearing and a doing. Both are involved. Now, notice in verse 28 where it says, and I'm going to read 28 down through the end, then we'll come back, just a few points. And the Lord heard the voice of your words when you spoke to me, and the Lord said to me, I have heard the voice of the words of this people which they have spoken to you, and they have done well in all that they have spoken. Listen to God's heart as he says, oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep my commandments always, that it may be well with them and with their sons forever. Go and say to them, return to your tents. But as for you, stand here by me, that I may speak to you all the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments, which you shall teach them, that they may observe them in the land which I will give them to possess. So you shall observe to do, just as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right or to the left. You shall walk in the way which the Lord your God commanded you, and you shall live, and that it may be well with you, and you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. You see twice where God said that it may be well with you. These commandments weren't given to burden people down, to wear black hats, to go around frowning, I'm a Christian, it's so dead and dull. God gave these to give you freedom, and we've misinterpreted them as chains. God gave them to give us peace. And we've reinterpreted him as an angry God out to foil our fun. Now, notice where it says here that God, he said, oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it would be well with them and their sons. This is the same thing as God saying, if you keep my commandments, if you love me, it'll not only be good for you, it'll be good for your kids, and their kids, and their kids' kids, and their kids' kids' kids. To those who love God, the promise is to 1,000 generations. Now, see what it says in verse 31, all the commandments and the statutes and the judgments. Now, this can't refer to the Ten Commandments. This has got to refer to the further laws that God told Moses after the Ten Commandments. So this is talking about the rest of the laws that are found in Leviticus and Numbers and on, more than just the Ten Commandments. And then when it says, you shall not turn from the right or to the left in verse 32, remember I told you the Hebrew words for sin are the words that mean to bend something, to make it crooked, to deviate from the standard, to turn aside, to get off the path, to fall in the ditch kind of thing. What God's saying is, don't overreact, don't do more than I've told you to do, and don't do less than I've told you to do. Just do what I've asked you to do. You know, stay with the standard. And the standard is the nature of God. Not society, not the flavor of our own age, not our mental level, not the culture we're brought up in. The standard that we'll be judged by is the person of God. That's why God says, be ye holy as I, the Lord your God, am holy. And that's why we couldn't hack it. And that's why the death of Christ is so important for us. We have God's righteousness given to us in Christ. None of us can meet the standard of God. Now, again, you see in verse 33 it says, and you shall walk. What does the word walk mean in the Bible when it's not used as walking from Jerusalem to Jericho or something? Lifestyle. Christianity is not a creed to be signed. Christianity is not a book to be memorized. Christianity is not laws to keep. Christianity is a lifestyle, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, relationship to God by faith. Lifestyle. Hear me? Lifestyle. It's not Sunday and Wednesday. It's a lifestyle, day by day. No time off for bad behavior. Okay. I'll take questions. I'm sure there's some about the Ten Commandments and all. Was it surprising to you that the interpretation about stealing and murder and those, or have you heard those before? Talkative little group. Yes, Lee. Right. Right. That's it. Right. If it was accidental, the relative still could kill him if he could catch him before he got to the cities. Right. But this thou shalt not murder did not apply to that accidental death. In other words, the community did not stone that person and drag him out of the city. If a relative happened to get there before that guy got to the city, then he could be killed. But this verse, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder, really, does not refer completely to accidental deaths. Okay? Now, there's some things that if you had a mean ox, and this ox had gored several people, but you didn't do anything about it, and that ox gored someone and killed them, it would have been an accident, but you would have been responsible, and you would have paid the death penalty. So there were some accidental deaths that are included in thou shalt not murder, but they were careless accidental. They were provoked accidental deaths. It's like if you didn't check your axe handle, and you just knew it was loose, but you said, well, I'll try one more tree anyway. Well, that kind of thing is included. But if you just didn't, you checked it, and it was good, and it was really an accident, it wasn't because of carelessness, then this verse does not apply to that. But you still had to run for it like a turkey, didn't you? In case the nearest of kin was very close. Yes, Jamie. Yes. No, now the Hebrew word there is just the word for steal. But these other two verses are the one that I think clarify it, because the whole context, see, is unfaithfulness to your brother. And so I think it's referring more than just taking a pencil or stealing a lunch. I think it's referring to the maximum crime, which would be kidnapping. Did you get those verses? Deuteronomy 24:7 and Exodus 21:16. It spells it out word for word. Huh? That's one of the examples that are used for, that was the horror of that crime, that they sold their own brother to slavery. See, they broke that commandment right there. Yeah, I agree with it. Yeah, that's an example. Anybody else? Have the Ten Commandments taken on a new light as we've gone through them? Man, if they haven't, I failed. Because last Wednesday, I hope I opened up the Ten Commandments for you, set in a context of grace, set in a context of God's love, not God's, boy, don't do that. So I hope this has opened up. I feel like sometimes we get a little legalistic about the Ten Commandments. Did y'all catch last week how is a Christian related to the Ten Commandments? Somebody answer that for me. I answered it last week, and I want to make sure you got it. Rick, how is a Christian related to the Ten Commandments? Well, that's no fair. Who is here that could explicate for us that? Phil, what do you think? Well, I saw you with your arms crossed. You look so intelligent, I thought. I've heard it called the Magna Carta for Redeemed Society. In other words, it's a structure of society for people to be happy. It doesn't make us right with God. It doesn't make us saved, so to speak. It doesn't get us to heaven. But after we are Christians, we keep it because it's God's rules to make us happy. It's for society. That's why we try to continue to influence people. We keep the Ten Commandments not to be right with God, but because God has given to us to be happy. So it's not for salvation. It's for living. It's a lifestyle. So they are important for the Christian, but they're not important as far as salvation. I think that's real important.